This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. After the Great Recession, Charlotte leaders looked for ways to diversify our economy. We're big in banking, but we needed to balance things out a bit. The tech sector is one area they set their sights on. This city was a natural place to try and establish a fintech hub, the marriage of finance and technology. And we've talked about that before. And we've talked about this idea of attracting people with technology skills to come here. It seems like a good idea, but possibly in this button-down town, a bit of a pipe dream. Well, that dream is coming true. A new report by the international real estate firm CBRE Group ranks Charlotte at the top of a list of 50 cities in its ability to attract and grow tech talent. The number of people with technical skills moving to the Queen City has grown by 74% in the last 5 years. So how did this happen, and what does it mean for the city's future? To talk about that, we've invited Dr. Yi Deng to return to the program. Dr. Deng is a professor in and dean of the College of Computing and Informatics at UNC Charlotte. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mike.
Now, Betsy Hooser, I'm going to do this wrong. It'll be... I got it right. Dr. Betsy Hooser, doctor. I made you a doctor.
Oh, okay.
Betsy Hooser Ittleby is CEO and co-founder of Tech Talent South, which works to grow that kind of talent in this area. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Dan Roselli is co-founder of Packard Place, an incubator of sorts for entrepreneurs of all stripes, including those in the tech sector. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Mike.
And Chuck McChain is director of research at the Charlotte Chamber of Commerce. Good morning to you.
Morning, Mike.
Did this growth in the tech sector occur in the last 5 years because of something we did, some program we put in place, some policy that we adopted, some campaign to lure these people to town? Or are we simply the beneficiary of serendipity? Nobody wants to answer
yes
that.
Yes and yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I think the Great Recession was really important for Charlotte because it realized that Charlotte needed to diversify where economic development happened. And all of a sudden, technology and entrepreneurship were things that everyone in Charlotte was supporting, not just the tech community, not just the entrepreneurial community. And then I think it got to the point where some of the benefits of Charlotte that attracts big companies here, quality of life, airport, weather, cost of living, all those things now play for entrepreneurs and tech folks that maybe didn't 5 years ago, because we passed a tipping point of having enough critical mass here that they see they see themselves here, and that wouldn't have been true maybe 10 years ago.
Okay.
I would add to that. I think what Dan says is true, but there is a larger factor.
Okay.
Namely, there is a fundamental transformation of economy in the last decade. Very literally, that every industry has become or is becoming an IT industry, precisely because Charlotte is a banking and financial services hub, that the financial services industry is the largest and the first one to make that transformation. That is because we need a far, far larger number of tech workers. Now, in the past, when we train, you know, IT professionals, we principally supply the traditional IT industry, the IBMs and Microsofts, all the IT departments in different organizations. But today, you know, whether you're doing marketing, customer service, supply chain, healthcare, investment, compliance, you name it, it's all become a technology worker. Mm-hmm. That's why.
And it's not just people like the Geek Squad repairing your computers or your IT department repairing Windows for you. It is people who are writing software and code and things that do what you want the computers to do for you. Is that correct?
That's right. And it's also, as Dan mentioned, and kudos to Dan because he's a big factor in this, it's people wanting to build out their own companies and know enough to be dangerous and hire other developers. And I think there was a big shift in Charlotte, and all of a sudden you see this big boom in the startup scene, and a lot of people know they can launch startups. And the reality is, if you can empower yourself with the skills to code, you can launch a new startup in a matter of weeks for, I don't know, the cost of hosting domain, $40, and you can iterate and tank it and do it over and over again.
I have no idea what you just said. let's start with coding, because that's what your company does. You teach people to code.
That's right.
And most people in the world will never write a single line of code because they buy it. They buy it when they buy a piece of software. Why do we need people who can write code? Just explain that to me.
Yeah, I think there are a couple different reasons. One, we need people that can code out all these wonderful new ideas that we're using, the Pokemon Go's and everything else in this world. But also, you know, everything we are using is related to code. So there are people that need to know enough code to be able to talk to, imagine a product manager at Bank of America talking to developers every day and having no idea what they're talking about. Knowing enough to be dangerous is really important. It's a language now, and, you know, everyone should be slightly fluent.
And Packard Place, which is an incubator for entrepreneurs, how many of your entrepreneurs are technical people or need technical people?
I would say almost all of them. So we have a lot of founders that are not deeply technical, but as Betsy says, are technically fluent to be able to work with folks. But we get more and more deep technical people. And one of the things I wanted to add to her comment, which I bet your listeners don't know unless they live in the world, part of what's changed now is that for entrepreneurs and startups, tech talent will go there, and they're okay coming to Charlotte because if that startup fails, which is likely, there are now lots of other places for them to go. Part of the problem we had recruiting talent into Charlotte is if the one startup failed that was recruiting them, where the heck do I go? And now, when a startup fails, the talent gets gobbled up instantaneously.
So we've built critical mass. Just the reason so many bankers are here is because of the critical mass of the big banks that were here as well. CBRE study, that's the real estate company that did this study that put Charlotte in the top 50. They reported new and expanding tech companies looking for highly skilled talent and lower cost of doing business are establishing footprints in more affordable markets like Charlotte, Nashville, Tampa, Seattle, and Phoenix. I was actually surprised to see Seattle listed among those cities as being affordable. But what makes us, Chuck McShane, what makes us affordable in comparison to these other cities in the country?
I think that cost of housing is really a major driver. Cost of commercial real estate is a major driver as well. Talent, as Dan said, is sort of the main driver for tech industry, even more so than other industries. And they look for talent above and beyond all other factors. And now that we have that critical mass, they're able to see Charlotte as a competitor for – see the other benefits of Charlotte, such as the lower cost of living.
And when did this trend begin to emerge or become noticeable?
I think it was definitely after the Great Recession. We have all that banking talent, mm-hmm. All that tech talent in the banks that kind of got cut loose, and many of them began to innovate.
Betsy.
If I could add on to that, I think one of the other things that happened during the Great Recession is a lot of people did get laid off and they needed to reinvent themselves. And so a lot of those people from the banks that were on the tech sector ended up building out their own companies. And that was a big fueling factor as well.
Now, we've talked about this before, I think, with you, Dr. Deng. We were always told or led to believe that, well, if you want a future-proof job, you go into technology, you go into computer programming, you go into IT. But then we've talked about this on the program, a lot of these jobs being shipped overseas, et cetera. So why are people gravitating? Why are young millennials, and that's who these people are, gravitating toward these careers in IT that may be shipped to India in 20 minutes?
There has been a huge misconception. There are lots of tech jobs being shipped out, but the percentage-wise is fairly small. In the meantime, that the number of new jobs, tech jobs created in the United States are far, far bigger than the number of jobs being shipped out. As we said earlier, that because in the 21st century economy, almost every industry has become a tech industry. Mm-hmm. So the need and potential, the balance between the supply and demand, it's become the gap, or rather between the supply and demand is getting bigger and bigger. Okay, in fact, you know, if you're citing numerous, there are a number of studies going on every day in this area. Right now, as we're speaking, there's over 500,000 jobs, IT jobs in the country on field because we cannot find people. In the meantime, that last year, the whole country graduated just from universities, less than 43,000 computer science graduates.
Wow.
So you can do the math. Yeah. Now, obviously, the computer science departments across the country are only one source of supplies of this talent, but it's the most important supply.
And we're going to talk about how places like Tech Talent South fit into this need to fill the demand for jobs. And you don't necessarily need a college degree for all of these jobs, but you do need to know how to do certain things. We'll talk about that. Getting back to the CBRE study, they mentioned Charlotte's rent-to-tech wage ratio being 13% as a dominant factor in the rising number of people with tech skills moving here. I'd never heard that term, so tell me what a rent to tech ratio is. What is that? What does that mean?
It would be just the factor of lower cost for rent or the cost of rent for a commercial real estate versus the wages of your tech talent. We have slightly lower wages on average for tech talent here than in other areas, and we have slightly lower commercial real estate industries. So the combination is good.
So we're not paying as much, but it doesn't cost as much to live here, is what you're saying. Also, the number of people involved in the tech industry, they say, has grown in Charlotte by 74% in 5 years. Is that because people are moving here, or is it because the university and CPCC and places like Tech Talent South are turning out locally homegrown people who are now moving into that industry?
I think it's a combination of all of those factors. But certainly at Tech Talent, we see a variety of students. It's not just your millennial. It's people that have been lawyers in the past and accountants, and they want to do something new, and they've heard about this amazing new opportunity in tech. And at Tech Talent South, you can go in an 8-week program and come out with the foundations and code and maybe kick down some doors and break into that industry.
Who makes a good candidate for people like you, for businesses like yours? Yours is not the only business that does this, but who's a good candidate?
Yeah, as far as students go, they kind of come from three veins. I would say one is very entrepreneurial. They never really want to be coding all day, every day, but they do want to know enough to be dangerous and to potentially fill that CTO role at a startup. The second would be someone that already works in that ecosystem. So like they might be a product manager, they're communicating with developers on a daily basis, and they need to know, the possibilities and the limitations of code. Mm-hmm. And then the third really is that individual that maybe doesn't have 4 years to go back to get a CS degree, but really wants to take a run in that market. And this is a springboard into potentially being a developer.
Let me add one thing to that, because it's really important. You said millennials. And so I think a lot of people think of Tech Talent as the 24-year-old white guy with tattoos and kind of bohemian looking. And certainly there's lots of that. What's important about where this is going, these tech jobs, these are the blue-collar jobs of tomorrow. These are the equivalent, I use the equivalent of working on the auto line, right? Tens of thousands of people earning wages that are $50,000, $60,000, $70,000. And we look at Charlotte's economic mobility issues, and I think I serve as the chair of the Charlotte Works Board, right? Putting workforce board in tech. This is an area where there's a huge amount of effort saying, how do we train Charlotte's youth to be able to access these jobs? They're going to pay $60,000 a year.
Well, you bring up something very interesting here. So let's go back up and talk about this for just a second. And we have to go to a break in about 30 seconds. So I'll ask the question, think about it during the break, and then we'll come back and get an answer. If these are the blue-collar jobs of today and tomorrow, if you are a former mill worker in Kannapolis or somebody who worked in Gastonia in the mills or someplace else in a blue-collar job that has disappeared, do you have the foundation to go to a place like Tech Talent South and get the information, the education that you need to become the blue-collar worker of tomorrow in this industry? We have 30 seconds left. Do you want to take a stab at it?
Absolutely. I mean, if you have the passion and the excitement for it, then without a doubt, we've had waiters and waitresses become amazing consultants at Level and Skookum.
But if you're 50 years old or 55 years old, are you going to feel awash in this information? Lost?
I partially agree with them, but I want to be careful that there are...
I'll get your take on this in a second. We have to take a break. We'll come back in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Blumenthal Performing Arts, presenting contemporary folk artist Sarah Jarosz, performing July 24th at McGlowan Theater. Tickets at blumenthalarts.org. And the Harvey B. Gantt Center, presenting Feast on Culture, Thursday, July 28th. Chef Ted Fellow and culinary historian Michael W. Twitty uses food to ignite conversation. Details at gantcenter.org. Well, the national conversation about the relationship between law enforcement and minorities plays out on the local level. Governor McCrory signs a law limiting the use of police body camera footage. The NBA continues to mull over a possible decision to pull the 2017 All-Star Game from Charlotte because of HB2. And Roy Cooper's campaign is raising more money than the governor's. We talk about those and other stories on the weekly news roundup tomorrow on this program at 9. Oh,
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is under fire for speaking her mind publicly about Donald Trump. She called him a faker who has no consistency about him. Trump said she's a disgrace and should resign. The implications of the Supreme Court justice entering the political fray.
The Diane Rehm Show, following Charlotte Talks from 10 to noon on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the growth of the tech talent population of Charlotte in the last 5 years. We're in the top, we're at the top of 50 cities in terms of the growth of that talent. Dr. Yi Deng is with us, the dean of the College of Computer and Informatics at UNC Charlotte. I think that's right. Betsy Hooser Ittleby is the CEO and co-founder of Tech Talent South, which is a company that helps train people to code at certain levels. Dan Roselli, co-founder of Packer Place, and Chuck McShane, research director of the Charlotte Chamber of Commerce, with us. We were talking about something that Dan mentioned just before the break, that these are these tech jobs, which are growing so rapidly, and as Dr. Deng pointed out, every business is a technology business now. So we need these people. We can't fill these jobs. That if these are the blue-collar jobs of tomorrow, can you, if you're not 25 and you really haven't interfaced much with a computer aside from getting on Facebook once in a while, can you transition with some help to these jobs, which are going to pay a decent amount of money? You were about to say something, Dr.
Right. I think to answer this question, we need to take a step back.
Okay.
That the tech job of yesterday is about making tools and infrastructure. So in other words, that tech workers are typically a backroom operator. But today,
the backroom operator is what? The people in the server room?
In terms of managing the networks, mm-hmm. databases, providing support, all you are the coders, designers, architects, managers to developing mm-hmm. the systems, right? But today, technology is about providing solutions and innovations of everything. So consequently, you're going to need a wide, much wider spectrum of people. Some of them need to be much more, even more sophisticated coders, designers, architects than before, because the system we design today are much bigger and complex.
You've called this the golden age of information technology, the second machine age, where IT is the key driver for innovation and growth in every industry, and that this transformation has created a need for tech professionals who not only understand cutting-edge technology, but also possess skills to creatively solve societal
exactly.
problems. I never heard that before. What exactly. societal problems are these coders going to solve?
Well, let's see. How do you prevent crimes? Right? How do you, let's say, a big movement right now in Charlotte is we want to build smart cities, from transportation to detecting crimes, and to make the living more in the condition more enjoyable for people, to improve the health, to preventing disease, to drive personalized medicine. All of that, the driver is about technology, is from technology. So that's why we need people. In other words, when we look at the market needs, the talent needs, we need to look at not only in terms of because of the wider spectrum of needs, that's why we're driving the big numbers. But in the meantime, it's equally important to understand we also need a new generation of technology talents who not only understand the technology, not only understand the coding, but also understand what this technology is about. What kind of problem can we solve? What are the problems to begin with? And in the meantime, to have the skills to understand the people, work with people, communicate, teamwork, so on and so forth. I think that is the landscape of the 21st century technology.
Are those people going to come from the universities, or can they also come from places like CPCC or Betsy's company?
Tech oh, absolutely. Talent. I think we need a far broader and wider talent pipeline for that.
Diverse. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And let me just say that that's why I said before the break that I want to be careful to say I wouldn't necessarily agree with Dan's statement that technology is the new generation of blue workers. I don't believe that's the direction to go. But I think I understand what he's trying to say. That is, we need a far broader range of people for that.
Well, if we're reaching the golden age of information and the second machine age, that fits in because the first machine age was populated by blue-collar workers.
I think we're agreeing and using different words to say
different terms. One of the things that we're talking about here, I guess the word diversity needs to be brought up because we're talking not just about millennials coming into these jobs, but older people as well and women. And you are the president, the founder, the CEO of a technology company, and by gosh, Betsy, if my eyes don't deceive me, you are also a woman.
It's true.
And your company is considered to be the second best boot camp in the nation for women. Is that by design, or did that just happen?
I have to say, too, the first is all women, so I don't know that we really count that, do we? I think it was a happy accident. Mm-hmm. I formed this company not even realizing that it was a little out of place for a woman to form one of these. Dan knows me very well, and I've been floating around in that scene for a while, and I didn't know I was an anomaly until it happened. But what's so great is that did force me to realize there was a severe lack of women in tech, and immediately we became one of the hubs for those women, and we started offering scholarships, and in Charlotte specifically have had unbelievable support. And if I could tell you a little one story, Skookum, a company here, kind of the ivory tower of web development, they're a wonderful company. They actually offered to sponsor a full scholarship for a woman about a year and a half ago and a free MacBook and do some training and a couple other things. And I think we received 150 applications. And the young woman that won was working as a janitor at the time, and she's now a UX designer and has been at many of the biggest companies here. And that happened within a matter of 3 months, which is a pretty phenomenal story.
Wow. What role does the Charlotte Chamber, or has the Charlotte Chamber played in not only spreading the word about Charlotte being an attractive place for people who want to do what we're talking about this morning, but also the fact that we already are? What role are you playing in that, and what are you hearing from members of the Chamber about their needs in this area?
A wide variety. We have a wide variety of tech companies that we work with. We try to support them, connecting them with customers, connecting them with needs within the city. I think one of the things that's interesting about the new diversity of technology companies is the way they are interacting with their cities. Whereas before, these companies were back office operations, large business park operations, they're now becoming much more involved in the civic fabric of a city because they are much more involved in efforts like smart cities and other more civic efforts.
If I may add to that, I think, you know, we worked with Chamber very closely, and I personally work with Chamber very, very closely. In fact, we were joking before the show that I know almost everybody at Chamber. Let me say, for example, Chamber organized the Tech Summit every year. We've been part of that. When we launched the Data Science Initiative, the Big Data Initiative from UNC Charlotte, the Chamber is the biggest supporter and advocate for that. Mm. And the Chamber has been very actively working not only with the companies, but also working with the university to really try to build up the broader picture and roadmap in terms of how do we drive the business growth in the region. How do we work together recruiting, you know, business to the region and so on and so forth?
You've been at the forefront at the university of this development of Charlotte into a technology location for a very long time. And in fact, the College of Computing and Informatics is the largest program of its kind in the state and one of the largest in the nation. Is your presence in this region helping not only to attract people interested in developing these skills, but also employers who want to take advantage of people with these skills? Are you helping in that effort?
I believe so. If you look at my college's growth in the last 7 years, I came to Charlotte in 2009, right after the Great Recession. The university suffered a biggest budget cut in its history. But, you know, with the leadership support from university, we actually consciously drive a very ambitious strategic growth. You know, 7 years ago, my college has barely about 900 students. Last year, we have 2,400. And this year, coming year, I'm projecting probably 26 or 27.
But that's an indication of why we are behind in being able to fill jobs. How many jobs did you say are available right now in the tech industry?
Across the country, estimated about over 500,000.
And
on field jobs.
And you have 2,600 students in the program, and it's one of the biggest in the country?
Yes. That's why I cited the data before that. The whole country last year graduated less than 43,000 computer science graduates as a country. That's why even, the fact is that almost all programs, technology programs across the country are growing very fast.
Right.
But the demand growing and order of magnitude faster. I think that is where the opportunity and the challenge is.
Which is, go ahead.
And Mike, that's why I was going to say that that blue-collar reference I used before, while the programs at UNC Charlotte, the undergraduate programs and master programs are fantastic and there is a need for those, there's a need for a whole bunch of workers that are not going to get four-year degrees in computer and informatics to fill that size of need. So that's why I referenced it as blue-collar. I meant it as non-four-year degree.
And that's where – I'm sorry, go ahead.
And that's why talent is the most important thing for information technology and technology companies above anything else. And they're looking for all types of talent from the universities down to the 12-week boot camps.
So that's where these boot camps come in, I would think. So talk to me about what happens in these boot camps. They're 12 weeks long. You come in. Can you come in knowing little to nothing?
Yeah, ours is 8 weeks long.
Okay.
It's very much focused for a novice, a beginner. Huh? But when I say that, we interview every student. So we are a little selective, and we make sure, you have the passion and the excitement for code. And I would say at least 80% of the people that go into a Tech Talent South, they've played around with something online already and they know they're interested. When you're there, you're actually building out apps every day. It's all applied knowledge, no theory like a computer science degree. You might come in one day and we'll say, hey, we're going to build Twitter from scratch for the next three classes. And one of the other things that's very important to a Tech Talent South and a lot of other boot camps is community. So we incorporate guest lectures and company tours into our curriculum.
So I can walk in the door on day one after being accepted with a limited amount of any amount of computer experience, but let's say I have a very limited amount.
Judging by your expression, I'm not sure.
But you're telling me that I can build Twitter in the middle of that experience?
There are open source languages now. So we focus in Ruby on Rails, and it is pretty mind-blowing what you can do. I mean, this is, I'm lucky that I learned with Ruby. But if you know how to scaffold out a social network, you could really do it in a matter of hours. This is very much simplifying the process, and you're not really going to be able to build Facebook at the end of 8 weeks. And what's been so interesting for me is I think a big part of my job, just as the bootcamp industry has grown, has been managing expectations, right? It is 8 weeks no matter how you spin it. You are not going to be Zuckerberg on the other side, but you're going to have foundational knowledge that you can build on.
But are there – I don't think Zuckerberg – does he code? Or is he just the brains behind it?
I don't know.
Can I come back for a second 8 weeks? Or are there levels of instruction in these boot camps? Or is it just 8 weeks and you're out and you're on your own?
Great question. So as we've grown, we've started to add on additional courses. So more advanced courses, one of those being Next Level Rails in Charlotte. We have an iOS course, a JavaScript application development course. And in our courses, almost across the board, our evening courses are over half TTS grads coming back to learn more, which is very exciting for us. Mm-hmm. And then an additional thing that we offer, so we do a lot of in-house training. So we work with a lot of companies in Charlotte, and we'll put together customized packages. So maybe the one company in particular is in Peak 10. If you're familiar, we have a partnership with them where a lot of their employees come through our code immersion, our core class. And then they go to an additional class that's focused just on the Peak 10 stack, so the languages that they use.
I wish I knew what you were talking about. 40% of the people who graduate from boot camps are women. Why? Why are they not in colleges? Why are they going to these boot camps? It's great because we've been talking about the shortage of women in IT for years now.
Yeah.
You're putting a dent in that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a range of factors. One, it's a lot cheaper and, you're only being taken out of the workforce for a matter of months instead of years. The tech scene in general is just very accepting. I think women feel very comfortable going to a boot camp. There are a lot of other women there and there are a lot of supportive women in the community. There's a group called Girl Develop It in Charlotte that is focused just on women.
So when you've gotten, when you have UNC Charlotte and you have MIT and places like that that teach computer science at the collegiate level and the doctoral level, and you have boot camps around the country doing what your company does, and I'm an employer, who am I more likely to hire? How are these boot camp graduates viewed in comparison to college?
That's what we talked earlier. There's a wide spectrum of talent needs. We need to be careful to saying that, you know, 8 weeks boot camp can do certain things, but there are lots of other things the boot camps will not be able to do. Mm-hmm. For example, you know, you wouldn't build a Google search engine with a boot camp. And in fact, Google started with from a PhD level research. And there are lots of complex banking systems, healthcare systems. Those things require much, much deeper and sophisticated skills from mathematics, logic, management, project, coding. But there are lots and lots of other jobs, tech jobs, can be fulfilled very well by boot camps, by community colleges, or even by self-learning.
So if I'm thinking of one or the other, if I'm young enough to have a time horizon that I can either spend 8 weeks in a boot camp or I can go and devote myself to a four-year degree or more, what question should I be asking myself about what I want to do with this skill so I can choose the right path?
Yeah, I think, one, we by no means consider ourselves a competitor with a CS degree. We've actually had a lot of people come to us after a CS degree and vice versa.
Really?
Absolutely. They are very, very different. I mean, like I said, we're completely applied knowledge. So you're going in there, you're building things. We don't have, you know, the theory behind it, and that's very extensive. I think you would look at, hey, how much time can I allocate, and how eager am I to, you know, how ambitious am I to kick down doors? Because with like a TTS, you absolutely can get to those places, but this is a long trajectory, right? So an example would be we had a grad from our first program in Atlanta in 2013 who now works in Charlotte. And, you know, fast forward to now, and she leads the front end development group. She's a very high paid consultant at Cardinal, and she spoke at Google I/O here. So that can happen. But it's not instantaneous, and you have a long way to go.
And Dan, I think it was you who mentioned the fact that you can go to one of these boot camps, and a lot of these entrepreneurs who are startups send somebody there, and mm-hmm. they become the chief technical officer of the startup. And a startup is small. I mean, it's tiny in comparison to the Bank of America. It's almost infinite. You can't even see it.
Right.
But as these companies grow, if you're successful and good at what you do and there's a demand for what your company does and you begin to grow – what happens to that CTO who may have enough information to do a startup, but not a company of 50 or 500 people?
Yeah, you'll see a natural evolution where there's a technical co-founder who will write the first set of code, get to what we call in the entrepreneurial world a minimal viable product, an MVP, mm-hmm. something where you can put it out there and get people to react and see whether you have something or not. But then when you get some real traction and some real private equity money behind you, you'll see a CTO with 20 or 30 years of experience, you know, come in and take over that role.
When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about what this growth in technology workers means to the city of Charlotte. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Bojangles, featuring iced tea for summer, freshly steeped and available all day, every day at area Bojangles. And Pike's Pharmacy. Patients receive all regular medications monthly at one time and may be prepackaged for individual daily dosage. Introducing Pike's Pass Packs and Meds Monthly. More info at pikespharmacy.com. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is under fire for speaking her mind publicly about Donald Trump. She called him a faker who has no consistency about him. Trump, in turn, said Ginsburg is a disgrace and should resign. So, in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, they talk about the implications of a Supreme Court justice entering the political fray. That's all upcoming. And if you'd like to join our conversation about tech workers, your chance is now. You can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or get it to us through Facebook or Twitter. We're coming right back.
This week on All Things Considered, we're on the ground in Dallas.
And we won't let this city be known for a hateful act that occurred here. This city is going to come together and show the world exactly what we're made of.
Conversations about policing, race, and healing. Plus, who's showing up and who's not at the Republican National Convention. Listen to All Things Considered every afternoon.
Weekdays from 4 to 6:30, weekends at 5 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the rise in the number of IT or technical skilled jobs in Charlotte and the rapidity of that rise in the last 5 years and what it means not only for prospects for employment but also for the city and what it will do to the city, which I want to talk about in this segment because it's going to change the face of the city in some ways. Dr. Yi Deng is the dean of and a professor in the College of Computers and Informatics at UNC Charlotte. Dan Roselli, the co-founder of Packard Place, which is an incubator for startups, and many of them are technology, and they all need technology people, according to Dan. Betsy Hauser Ittleby is the CEO and co-founder of Tech Talent South, which is a company that teaches people coding in a short amount of time. And Chuck McShane is research director of the Charlotte Chamber of Commerce. Before we talk about how this will change Charlotte, let me share with you some comments that have been coming in from listeners as we've been talking. Jimmy tweets, is there any focus on growing cybersecurity talent? It's a huge sector, and there are not enough people in the sector.
Absolutely. If you look at many different sub-disciplines of the IT, almost everyone, there is a large gap of talent supply. But the biggest one is in the cybersecurity.
And what's why? Why is there a special need for special kinds of skills in that area?
Because, again, there's a fundamental transformation of needs in cybersecurity. In barely 3-4 years ago, cybersecurity means we build a wall, preventing bad guys from coming in. Mm-hmm. But today, cybersecurity become a full-blown enterprise and society issue. So in other words, you need to follow the same talking points we had before. You need a far larger number of people with a far broader skill set to deal with that. We are in the process of launching the first master degree program in cybersecurity in the state of North Carolina, one of the very first in the country, precisely trying to address that demand.
And is that because we're a banking center and we have a big demand for that in the banking sector?
Banking, healthcare, energy, you name it. Mm-hmm. If you look at the energy sector, if you talk about security before, what that means is a physical security. How do I protect my power plant, my substations? But today, cybersecurity become equally, in the future, perhaps even more important.
How do I protect the grid?
Yeah,
and people
because
attacking
think about
grid.
It. Smart. We are migrating to so-called the smart grid. Mm. What exactly is smart grid? Smart grid is a computer network.
Right.
And Mike, I was going to add one comment. Forward thinking from the university. I think the university is hosting their 17th annual cybersecurity conference
yes.
this year. This is something universities have been working on for decades, and it right. really is one of the premier programs in the country.
Wow. Greg emails, if you listen to the critics, this is the kind of field, I guess IT, that would be affected by HB2. PayPal withdrew expansion plans in Charlotte because of HB2. Has tech taken a hit as the result of HB2? This sounds like a Chamber of Commerce question to me. Chuck, you're on the hot seat.
I think that's a question for that statement for well above my pay grade. However, I think we need to be a welcoming city for tech talent. And that's all I'll say about that.
Is there something about the people attracted to IT that would make them offended by HB2?
Well, I'll make one comment. You know we run an accelerator program, and we brought companies from all over the country into Charlotte. Most of them went back to where they were because they didn't want to be in North Carolina. This was a serious issue for them. Mm-hmm. And I am an outspoken critic of HB2, so I'll disclose that. But my first rule always is, you know, do no harm. And if you were going to create a bill that discouraged tech talent and entrepreneurs coming to North Carolina, it would look a lot like HB2.
What is it about HB2 that discourages tech talent and entrepreneurs? Explain it to me. I don't understand it.
So it is a very opening, accepting mm-hmm. culture, right? It is the diversity of opinion. It's the diversity of backgrounds. Our last accelerator class, for example, there was somebody who was Muslim, Jewish, evangelical, Catholic, agnostic, atheist. You couldn't get a more diverse group of religious viewpoints in Charlotte anywhere. That's part of what the community is, and it's the acceptance of that.
Well,
is important.
When Richard Florida published his book about the creative class, we had several programs on this, and Charlotte proclaimed itself as a city that wanted to be open to the kinds of things that had to happen to attract the creative class. We did a little navel-gazing and to see what changes we could make to attract these less rigid free thinkers, freer thinkers, I guess I should say. Is that partly why we have been successful at attracting the numbers, the growth in tech talent that we've been able to do, because we actually did a little navel-gazing and changed some things? And if so, what did we change?
Absolutely. So tech talent is really an urban phenomenon. The growth of the tech industry is an urban phenomenon, and we've done a good job of reshaping Charlotte, doing urban development, urban infill projects, places where people who want to walk to work want to be able to have that knowledge interaction, knowledge spillovers that you get from interacting at a place like Packard Place or somewhere else, a coffee shop.
So this is also happening in Raleigh-Durham, the same kind of growth in the tech industry. And they're a little ahead of us, actually. In the top 50 cities, they're in the top 10, and we are not. So they're ahead of us. So this is, as you said, an urban phenomenon, this tech growth in the tech sector. So in North Carolina, we seem to have a battle between the urban, in the legislature, between the urban areas and the rural areas. Can we be successful? Are we kidding ourselves? Can we be successful if the legislature is working against the urban areas of the, and they apparently are in some cases, and in this case, in HB2, it works against the interests of urban areas who want to grow in this field. Is it possible to succeed in North Carolina with that paradigm?
I personally think it is. I mean, I've talked to Mayor Roberts about this as well, and I think the message we want to send in Charlotte is Charlotte is welcoming. It's the whole everyone welcome, the always welcome campaign in Charlotte. And Charlotte is different than other parts of North Carolina. The message we want to send to the world, come to Charlotte, help us fight this, and help us move it forward. That's what our history has been. I think we can win.
But is there an impression among the tech workers from outside, these freer thinkers, these open-minded people that you've talked about in a second ago, that once you leave Charlotte, you're in North Carolina, and so therefore I don't want to be there?
I think that's true, and the hard part for entrepreneurs, it's easy for them to go anywhere, right? It's not like they have a lot of anchors and a lot of roots. They can go start in any city in America. So something as small as that can be a tipping point of, why would I want to hassle with that when I can go to Atlanta or I can go to Washington, D.C. or go to Austin? Why? It's just one thing in the negative column that we don't need.
But if I'm living in a small town and I like the direction that the state is taking itself into, why do I care whether Charlotte succeeds as a tech center or that I please these people from outside the state when I like it just fine the way it is?
I think the state's economy is so interwoven that what is good for one North Carolinian is good for all. And we've got to find a way to compromise on this issue. You know, maybe Charlotte's ordinances are different than they are rurally. But when cities in North Carolina succeed, North Carolina succeeds. When the rural areas in North Carolina succeed, North Carolina succeeds. We have to do both.
If I may add that, you know, the tech industry, there are two things very, very unique. One is, as Damon mentioned more than once, is this is a talent-driven industry. Mm-hmm. Secondly, you could build a successful tech company almost everywhere. Mm-hmm. So there is a, when managed well, I don't see why not. You cannot build a successful, surviving tech company in a rural area.
Mm. You know, you said something that this is a talent-driven industry. Broadcasting used to be a talent-driven industry, and they found a way, the MBAs who run broadcasting, found a way to minimize the impact of talent so they could homogenize it and mass-produce it and do it cheaply and not pay a lot of money. Is that going to happen in this industry as well?
I don't think so. I think this is fundamentally, tech work is a creative work. It's not just say you follow some formulas and some templates, you get job done. It is fundamentally about solutions, innovation, and creativity.
Ann emails, the booming tech areas like Seattle and Silicon Valley are increasingly unaffordable. Is Charlotte in a position to avoid those problems? We are at the moment. Will that continue, do you think?
I think so. It depends on the volume of how many tech workers we get in. Now, tech wages for tech talent here accounts for about 10% of the wages in Mecklenburg County. So it is a major impetus. However, I think we have enough space to grow. And these, because of that large wage differential that those tech jobs will create, they're going to create other jobs. And it will rise all boats.
If I may add one point, I think a very interesting point. One thing Charlotte has done very successfully is to build major clusters of industries, from banking to healthcare to energy. Now, all of those clusters are vertical clusters. Now, the reason we have a tech boom in Charlotte is because we now having another major cluster. This is a technology cluster. What's different from with this cluster with the others is this is a horizontal cluster, cutting across all industries. And I think that is something very, very interesting to see, and we need to do everything possible to further build up, because when we build that up, we not only support the technology industry per se, we support every industry there is here.
So we're going back to talking about the critical mass of building enough tech people here so that if Duke Energy, where they're employed, cuts back on their tech sector, they can go to the banks, or they can go from the bank to the healthcare industry. Mm-hmm. That's what you're talking about.
Well, Duke Energy by itself is a major employer of our students, mm-hmm. for example. And so are every other industry we have here.
And we have a much more diverse tech sector than a lot of other places.
Meaning?
Meaning in Raleigh, about 55% of your tech workers are in those core tech companies. Here it's only about 30%.
Core tech companies.
Core tech companies, meaning the ones you think of, IBM, yeah, right. Microsoft, those companies. Whereas here we have 11% in finance.
If you're a coder, if you're a technology person, do you care whether you're devoting yourself and your career to working in the healthcare industry in technology, or in the banking industry in technology, or in the energy sector in technology? Does it matter to you as long as you're doing what you want to do, the exercises in your brain that makes you happy as a tech person?
I think that's the luxury of being desired. Mm-hmm. They get to decide which places they like the best, and they hop around a lot, which is, I think, one of the concerns in the city. It's hard to keep good talent because we desperately need new talent. So if you're a great developer, you have a recruiter calling you every day to try to get you go somewhere
what
else.
What are we doing to keep good talent here? Because there are other places that are better. The San Francisco Bay Area is the number one technology area in the country. Washington, D.C., which is 500 miles up the road, is number two. That really surprised me. I guess because of the government. Yeah. Seattle's number three, and Raleigh-Durham is ahead of us. So what are we doing to keep people here? Not just attract them, but keep them once they come.
I think building those urban amenities, building those things for young people to do, focusing on that specialized fintech sector is going to be very important in that as well. Bringing people together, like with our tech summit, the Charlotte Chambers Tech Summit, August 19th, bringing people together from all industries. And just continuing to build on those urban amenities. Is going to
what
be
does
important.
The growth that we have experienced so far, since we're the number one growth city in the country for technology workers, what has it meant to the city? How has it changed us? What does it mean to business? What does it mean to people who live here and are not business people?
I think it's changed the culture quite a bit. Talent tends to be younger. So it's brought in a lot of young vitality to areas like South End.
Is that why we have all these apartments?
Partly.
And all certainly. The breweries.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely part of it. So it's going to change the culture, and I think it's changing the business culture in a lot of ways. I know Dan's talked about this before. Mm-hmm. We are a corporate headquarters city, but we're quickly becoming an innovative city too. And that's different cultures.
I would add to that, you know, in addition to the normal factors of why people like Charlotte, it is also very important to realize that for the tech workers specifically, there are a couple of things that are really important. One is continued education and career development. And do we have this intellectual environment, you know? One of the things I always tell every one of our students that, you know, it is a blessing and a curse if you major in any of our technology programs. Why? Because this is an area full of opportunities. No matter what you want to do, what your passion is, you can find your role here. On the other hand, this is also a field which changes literally every minute. If you do not continue to keep yourself up, you will be, even though we have, you know, we have a huge gap in talent supply. You will be laid off sometimes because your tech skills will be out of date.
You wanted to jump in here on this, Betsy.
I was just, when we were talking about the difference in Charlotte, I was thinking about the first time I was walking uptown after Skookum moved into the penthouse suite above Dean and DeLuca, and walking through and all of a sudden riding the elevator with about 10 guys and a couple girls in jeans and t-shirts and thinking, this is very different for Charlotte and I really, really like it.
Becca on Facebook wants to know how much an average 8-week boot camp costs.
Yeah, we're, I would say, among the most affordable, and we're right at $7,000 for 8 weeks. I would say the average is probably closer to 12 at this point.
Okay. Alexandra tweets, developers, tech jobs are the blue-collar jobs of tomorrow. More non-tech jobs involve, if not require, basic coding. Is that true? Non-tech jobs require basic coding? Aside from writing a macro for Word?
Depends on what job you're talking about. Certainly if you're in a tech industry, it, like we talked about a little earlier, it's nice to be fluent and to know what's going on. I don't know that everybody needs to know code right now.
And finally, Martin emails, could someone interested in a tech career self-train fully online?
Absolutely.
If you have the discipline, if you have the necessary foundation, yes, you can.
Wow. We have not been able to talk about big data, which we've talked about before on this show, but some people have said that we are the Silicon Valley. We are set up to become the Silicon Valley of the South and the Big Data Valley. Do you agree with that very quickly?
I think given the industries we have in Charlotte, financial, healthcare, big data has a very, very big role to play for the future of this broader economy.
The number of headquarters as well.
Would you call us the Silicon Valley of the South?
Yes.
Wishful thinking? All right, Betsy Hooser, it'll be CEO and co-founder of Tech Talent South, Dr. Yi Deng, Dean of the College of Computer and Informatics at UNC Charlotte, Dan Roselli from Packer Place, and Chuck McShane from the Charlotte.